Hello, Queens. I have got a juicy one for you today. As always, well, before we get started, a few things to share with you. If you haven't already joined my free group, why not? we actually have a free group coaching call coming up this week, next week on, let me check, on Thursday the 23rd at 1:30 Central European time. The good news is all the recordings are posted in the group. So there's also previous coaching calls in there that you can catch up on. There's also masterclasses that I've done in the past. And this is all for free, of course, that are also posted in the free group. And if you can join the call on the Thursday, next Thursday, and you do want coaching, I'm hosting all of that for free as well. So definitely do that if you haven't already. And I think that's it. Oh yeah, no, the other thing is, I've not mentioned this for a while. If you haven't already, I would absolutely be so grateful if you could rate my podcast 5 stars. If you're watching on YouTube, then give it a thumbs up, subscribe, all of that jazz. And I know everyone says this, but we say this for a reason, because it helps other people find our content if people are liking it, and especially with the podcast rating. Thank you in advance for doing this. Like, you can write a nice review if you want to take that extra few minutes, or just 5 stars would be very much appreciated. So thank you so much in advance if you get value out of these podcasts. It's a way of giving back to me. Not that you have to give in order to receive, but I am asking you. So let's get into it today. So as you know, the title is called Will I Be Overweight After Recovery? And Should I Follow All of My Sweet Cravings? This podcast are from two questions, in-depth long questions that I got asked. So I'm going to read question one. Again, each question's quite long, and I was considering shortening them, but actually there's a lot I want to say when I answer within the question. So question number one is, I'm not going to share the person's name because I've not actually asked permission, so I'll do them both anonymously. Question number one: I'm going to give a brief background and wanting to ask if you can do a podcast regarding being overweight as a child and fear of that after recovery. So I was overweight from being very young, 3 years old. My parents, in my eyes, have done nothing wrong, and we always had great family meals together. I just loved food and I could eat a lot. I remember having 2 breakfasts before school and finishing the other kids' snacks after school, always asking for seconds at mealtimes that I loved. It scares me because I also remember throughout my childhood eating in secret, binging on cookies, bread and cheese when no one was around. I felt so ashamed of my size and for eating, ashamed of eating in general at meals and the secret eating. My parents and sister and I moved country from England to France when I was 4. I was bullied for being different. I was also bullied for being fat until I was 14, which is then when I developed anorexia and exercise addiction. From having my first examination by the school nurse at 6, I was told I needed to eat less, move more, and lose weight. I was even told that if I didn't, then I wouldn't make it to my 25th birthday. Anyway, I tried many diets and developed anorexia at the age of 14. So now I'm all in recovery, and this queen is doing fucking amazing, by the way. She's all in recovery, and after 8 years of anorexia, the extreme hunger has hit. During my feast eating, I'm remembering the times where I would binge as a child. I'm afraid that I'm going to develop the same behaviours as when I was a child and also become overweight and addicted to food. That's how I felt when I was a child. It's a long story, but any help with the way I feel would be super appreciated. Right, I'm going to dive in with the answers then. Before I do, if you can hear loud music, I do have my office windows open because it's so hot over here and looks like it's going to have a thunderstorm. And the delivery man has rocked up outside with his funky Turkish music on, and it's really cool. If you can't hear it, you are missing out. Anyway, all right, my notes to answer this then, I've just got bullet point notes here. You said that you were overweight as a 3-year-old, but overweight compared to who or compared to what? Because I know that they measure babies against, like, they find the average, and then if you or if a baby is over the average weight, then they're considered overweight. And that's actually not helpful in my eyes, because we're only okay or not okay if we're comparing ourselves to some kind of other metric or some other person, you know? So I just wanted to start off by saying that overweight, in quotes, as a three-year-old compared to what? Another three-year-old? Because as a three-year-old, I am almost certain that your body would be exactly where it needed to be, right? I did want to ask, and of course I know I can't ask you and wait for an answer because this is a podcast I'm recording. It's worth bringing to your attention, to the listeners' attentions. Did anything, maybe you don't remember, it was you were such a young age, or if you know about anything happening to you that was traumatic around the age of 2 or 3, such as sexual abuse, some trauma of some kind, and again, you might not remember, especially because you were so young, and also we block this stuff out unconsciously if it was very painful. I'm not saying you would have had this experience, but it's worth asking because this is very common. If you noticed a pattern, although again, you were very young, if you notice a pattern of quote unquote unusual behavior with your eating, for example, there's a reason for that. So I'm just curious if you want to feel into that, ask any questions from anyone you trust, like did something actually happen to you? Did someone do something to you when you were around 2 or 3? Another question which you might find interesting that I'm asking you this, and you might not know the answer to this, and of course you can ask, just gives us context depending on the answer. When your mother was pregnant with you, do you know if she restricted? Do you know if she quote unquote watched what she ate? Do you know if she was dieting? Because the study's been done that if a mother is restricting when she's pregnant, obviously she's growing a baby, she's growing life within her, the last thing a pregnant woman needs to be doing is restricting of any kind, then there's been this proof that shows, and I'm going to use the words that the science use, a baby who has been grown in a womb where the mother was restricting, the baby is quote unquote overweight. As the baby grows and progresses into adulthood, because when the baby was growing and there wasn't enough, it's like built in your cellular level, the fear of not being enough. So that can explain the, you know, the eating in secret, the eating what you were saying would have been a lot of food compared to another child of a similar age and a similar activity level. It can be depending on what your mother ate or didn't eat during pregnancy, and there's nothing we can do about that, right? If your mum did restrict, and therefore like in the cells of your body there's a fear of restriction, so you need to get food in case there's not enough, like what you experienced when you were in the womb, that can contribute to it as well. So I did want to bring that up. A red flag I wrote down is, and I asked the question here, why were you ashamed about eating as a child, and why were you eating in secret? I assume that you were told that you were greedy or that you were eating too much and it wasn't okay, the amount you was eating, because you've already mentioned you were told you were overweight when you were 3. So of course there was restrictions put on you. So therefore, of course, you would then want to eat a lot of food if restrictions were put on you, right? Even if they weren't physically put on you, if you're hearing and seeing your caregivers, your parents, being worried about you being fat or overweight, there's going to be a reaction to that. There's going to be that scarcity feeling of, oh my God, the food is either being taken away from me, or there's not going to be enough in the future, or actually I'm being told the way I have my desires around food is bad and wrong. So the fact that you were eating in secret is a big red flag, because of course there was a lot of shame around that, and that's not okay. You shouldn't feel ashamed for following your appetite as a child or as an adult. I know that a lot of us are because of stuff like this, and you know, the way our parents were doing their very best, and they were being told by professionals that if you were overweight, quote unquote overweight, then you needed to do something about it. They thought they were helping you, but actually it didn't help you at all, did it? So that's a red flag, that the fact that you were eating in secret. You said you moved when you were around 4 from England to France. And that's when you were bullied as well at school. Now, moving in general at such a young age can be a big deal for highly sensitive children. And I know for a fact that you are highly sensitive and highly intuitive. And I know that for, well, I say it very strongly, don't I? I know it for a fact. I would put all my money on it that you are, because every single person I've worked with who's had an eating disorder, including myself, is highly sensitive and highly intuitive at the core of who they are. So moving would have had a big impact on you, especially when you were bullied. And that's a lot. And that would contribute to how you feel about yourself, your worthiness, your acceptance, all of that. The fact that you were then told to eat less and move more when you were six, and being threatened that if you didn't follow that those guidelines, you wouldn't make it until your 25th birthday, that's ludicrous and infuriating to me. That's not okay. I mean, what the hell was that professional thinking when he or she said that to you? Honest to God, we need a lot more education around that. And so I'm really sorry that you had that experience. And then you go on to say, you know, the extreme hunger that you're experiencing now because you're in recovery. And I'm massively celebrating you for that, because you're doing an incredible job and it's scary as fuck, let's be honest. There is a difference between extreme hunger and binging. It might feel very similar because behaviorally it looks similar. But the difference between extreme hunger and binging is as follows. Extreme hunger is, of course, your body's way of signaling to you, I need to eat a shitload of food, like all day with hardly any breaks. I need to rest a lot. And you just follow, the idea is to just surrender to that and just follow your mental and physical hunger and allow your body to make up for all the calories that it needs to get in, to make up for all the calories you've not had enough of in the past, all the repair work your body needs to do internally, externally, and store a bit just in case you restrict again, which I'm going to go into overshoot weight in a moment. So extreme hunger is simply a natural, biological, normal and healthy response to restriction, severe restriction. Binging is also a healthy, natural response to restriction, but it's a little bit different. For example, when I was in anorexia recovery, I went through extreme hunger and I ate a lot of food during the entire day for a long period of time. I wasn't trying to restrict. I mean, I had a lot of fear, obviously. It wasn't just like I was like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna go all in and recover and then it's just fine to eat all this food. Wasn't fucking fine, was it? It was the worst thing in the world, but I still did it. So in the anorexia recovery, I did eat a lot all the days for like weeks and months on end. When my anorexia then morphed into binge eating and bulimia, which I'm just going to say bulimia because I was always compensating the binges with some kind of purging behaviors. And that happened because I didn't get the right help. I still had an eating disorder mentally. Yes, not anorexia anymore. The genetic biological migration response had been switched off, but I still had an eating disorder. So then I started binging, and that was different to extreme hunger in the way that I would restrict all day and then all week or as long as possible, basically. And then when I couldn't like hold back anymore, I would binge in like one go. Let's say it started off on like a Friday night, then it would go from like Friday to Saturday, then it would be like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, like over a 3-day period. And it would be buying all the food that I'd restricted and that I'd been desiring and wouldn't allow myself to have. I would eat it all in one go, and I would be like force feeding myself too. So whereas extreme hunger is, you, even if you're physically full, so full, you just still feel empty. It's a weird feeling to describe. That's someone who hasn't experienced that. It's hard for them to grasp. But binging for me, I was really physically full and I'd had enough food, but I still forced myself to have more because it was like, well, after Monday, I can't have this again because I'd start the restriction, the diets again. So I need to get it all in now. And so I was eating these binges in reaction to physical restriction that week, that day, And then also impending restriction on the Monday, every Monday. So binging is, again, it is a reaction to a restriction, but it's more an acute experience where you're not necessarily hungry for it, but you have to eat it anyway. You don't have to, but it feels like that innate primal feeling of having to eat it. The only way out of binging and extreme hunger is to allow, and I'm going to go into that in a moment. But you said that you felt addicted to food as a child. Now, it's not possible to feel addicted to food. I mean, it's not possible to be, addicted to food, but it is possible to feel addicted to food. There's actually a whole episode I did called Is Food Addiction Real? So if you want to find that episode, search either on my website, go under podcast, you can literally search the words and it finds it for you, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, search, of course, The Body Love Binge, Is Food Addiction Real? And that episode will come up. You can't be addicted to food, but you can feel like you're addicted to food. And I go in depth as to why that is in that episode, so I won't bring it up again now. But also, if you feel like you're addicted to food, it can be a big support for you, like emotionally. You know, if you had something happen to you when you were 2 or 3 years old, it can be a big comfort. That can be entwined with everyone around you saying you're too big, you need to lose weight. There's a rebellion act of that. There's also a biological act of this. There's many layers to this, but it's okay and it's normal, but you can't be addicted to food. And you also said, of course, the main question you asked was, will you become overweight after you have recovered? The answer is that to that. We don't know. And that's the hardest thing about recovery. And that's not knowing. Because I don't know, and you don't know, what your set point weight is. Because you were being restricted from the age of like 3 or 6 at the very, you know, the very latest at the age of 6, from what I'm hearing you share. I started restricting from the age of 9, so I had no idea what my set point weight was either. So that's really scary, because at least if you, you know, if you have kind of an idea of where you sit when you have a quote unquote normal relationship with food, that's when your set point weight naturally happens. It's so hard not knowing, because I was even like, right, okay, let's just say I'm going to get really fat, whatever that meant to me at the time. I just wanted to know. So even if I would have felt better. I would have felt better if I'd actually just known that, but I had no frigging clue. All I could do to kind of support the fear a little bit, which is feeding into the fear at the same time, is look at my parents and my grandparents and kind of see what their genetic makeup was. Also, though, they were all restricting. My dad wasn't ever restricting, and he's just like a normal slim build. My mum was always restricting, like, and then binging. So she was like on the yo-yo diet train for the entire life. She was just medium sized. My grandma was kind of medium sized to fat, and I say that in just a descriptive word. And my granddad was medium size, and he didn't have any problem with food. My grandma did. So I kind of just based that on, okay, I'm going to end up probably similar to my mum-ish size. And I didn't like it, but I had no choice anymore. I did not want to be in the hellhole of the eating disorder. So I made that choice. So you will have a set point weight that you will only arrive at when you've healed your relationship with food and yourself. And it's a holistic way of recovery, and that's how I work. So holistic meaning, you know, you're getting enough sleep, you're actually fucking happy in life, you're doing stuff that brings you joy, you have good relationships, you have people around you that you want in your life. Yes, you're nourishing yourself from a place of nourishment and pleasure. You're moving your body in a way that feels good. You're no longer afraid of food. There's no guilt around food. When you reach that place, because you will be at your set point. We do have an overshoot weight though. Not everybody, but most people I've worked with, and me too, I had an overshoot weight. And that means that, remember when I said a little while back that your body needs to repair everything that's gone on internally, externally, and it also needs to save a bit in case you restrict like that again. your body is not stupid. So it's like, right, okay, well, if she's restricted for all this time, now there's food coming in, let's store extra just in case that happens again. And this is why dieting, restricting over time, it can raise your set point weight. And that's shit. And there's nothing we can do about that apart from stop restricting, honestly. Would I be thinner if I'd never restricted in my life? Maybe, but I have restricted in my life. So this is where I am, you know, and I'm still just like normal medium sized person. But I was a bit bigger than I was now. For about a year. So it took me, I didn't have me as a coach, just putting it out there, plugging myself there with my coaching. I didn't have me as a coach. I figured a lot of this out by myself. I had coaches all the way through, still have coaches for different stuff. I believe in coaching, that's kind of obvious. But I didn't have everything that I teach in one place and one person. So I'd say it took me about a year to fully recover. And that's not always the case if you have someone who knows what they're doing. I had bits missing that I've pieced together myself. And then it took about a year for my overshoot weight to naturally come down to what it is now. And this is my set point weight. There's nothing I did in any way, shape or form to make my overshoot weight go down. I kept eating fully unrestrictedly and still do for life. Hashtag unrestricted eating for life. It just happened. So that's a thing too, and it can be really bad because of course you're getting used to your weight gain, you're getting used to your new body, and you're not going to like it to begin with. You do get to fully accept it though, that's part of the work we do. But then you're actually probably the biggest you'll ever be until you naturally come back down to your set point. So that's scary too. But every single thing in the world has a cost and a gain. Everything. So the question really does become, what do you want most? Is staying small for the rest of your life worth what you have to do and how you have to live in order to stay small? It wasn't for me anymore. Like, I weighed it up and I was like, right, okay, I'm slim. I have a six pack. This was in the bulimia. And I like that. It feels safe. I'm being validated, all the things. But the way I'm having to live, the binges are getting worse. I'm actually gaining weight anyway, even though I'm doing my best to restrict. I seem to have like lost the ability to do so at some point, which freaked me out. So I weighed that up and I was like, I'm just done with this life. Like, I'm just going to lean in to the fact that I'm going to put weight on. And then what I started to do, which was really helpful, was look at women my size and bigger. So women who were quite a bit bigger than me, maybe 2 to 3 sizes bigger than me, and kind of get myself on board with the fact that I'm probably going to look like this. And I'm going to make myself, in the most loving way possible, be okay with that, because I'm no longer willing to accept the life I have to live to stay in the eating disorder anymore. I'm just not willing to do that anymore. I'm done. Right? So then the cost of leaving the eating disorder and the restriction and the control was weight gain and me not having a clue how to accept my body and like me as a bigger person. And that's the work, right? That's the whole point. So also my question to you is, I'm going to call you Queen G because that doesn't share your full name, but you know who you are and you like being called that. So Queen G, let's go even deeper. Like, what does weight gain mean to you? And of course, this is for everybody. What does weight gain mean to you? If you gained weight or you got quote unquote fat, which is what your fear is from having that, you know, that horrible experience all through your childhood, what would that mean to you? And then everything that comes up for you, you can look at each one and be like, okay, well, I'm going to be with myself through these feelings and fears. And then you can start to find evidence against that actually being true. Even if you can't find it evidence for yourself, you can start to find it for other people. And that helps. And then with coaching, which I think you're considering signing up to one-to-one coaching, with coaching, we can really get, you know, hit the ball rolling with this. Hit the ball rolling? Is that even a thing? You know what I'm saying? We can really dive deep into all of this to get you fully recovered because, yeah, you need to work on the behavioral stuff, but you will never fully recover unless you're doing the body image work, the self-love work, the trauma work, the inner child stuff, the repairing your relationship with food. And that's my real recovery roadmap, those five pillars, what we go through. So I want to just remind you, not remind you, you might not have even considered this. For me, when I was gaining weight and I didn't like the way my body looked, I kept reminding myself, because I wanted this to be true for me, and I'm very determined when I want something, I kept reminding myself, I can live a happy, free, and loving life without liking the way my body looks. And even though that didn't feel true, I wanted it to be true. I've got hiccup burp, sorry. I wanted it to be true. And so I just found fucking evidence to make that true for me. And lo and behold, I do like the way my body looks. I don't love the way it looks, but I like the way it looks. I'm fully, fully, fully accepting of it. And my life is freaking awesome. I live the best, happiest, like free life I could ever imagine me living. And I've gained a ton of weight since leaving the eating disorder behind. So start with that mantra of like, it is possible to live a free, happy life without liking or loving the way my body looks. That is possible. And it is, because I have living proof of that. Another thing I want to leave you with is, ultimately comes down to a choice, as everything does. Life is one big choice. It's full of choices, and that's the power we have to choose what we want and what we don't want, right? So are you willing to do what it takes to live in the freedom that is on the other side of this fear? And what can help you with that is, every time the fear comes up, you can ask yourself, what would the loving version of me do? What would my self-loving self do or think right now? And then do that on repeat. I hope that's helped for question number one. Now we're going to move into question number two. Let me just have a sip of my water. And this is a longish question too, but I really think there's a lot of value in reading out the question. And so I'll keep this question anonymous, because again, I haven't asked permission to share the name. My question is about craving sweet foods. In the daycare and after that, I was also working with a nutritionist and I had to follow a meal plan. Nothing with calories, grams and stuff, but just the approximate amount of food I was supposed to eat in a day. And even though they weren't exact calories and numbers, my brain automatically counted the approximate number of calories I was supposed to eat in a day due to this meal plan. So since then, I have my imaginary line of calories that I can't go over. It's not super precise now because I'm not counting my precise calories. It's always just the subconscious counting in my head. I'm sure you know what I mean. I do. And so now I'm at a stage where I'm able to eat quite a lot of types of food, but I just can't cross the imaginary line because then I feel like I overate, like I'm gaining weight, and just horrible feelings. And to finally get to the sweet foods, ever since I started restricting, I was always craving so many sweet foods, obviously. Before recovery, I wasn't allowing myself to have any. And then we started to slowly implement them into my eating. And now I'm at a point where I don't have like a huge problem with eating chocolate cake, biscuits and stuff, but it's only when it doesn't cross that imaginary line. So for example, it's a bit of an overstatement, but I could eat just chocolate the whole day unless I didn't cross the line, if that makes sense. And I have got this type of mindset around food for about a year now, and the cravings for sweet foods are not anyhow smaller, even though I'm allowing myself to have them. I would way rather have something sweet the whole day, for example, peanut butter, fruit, syrup, etc., or some sweet pastries. Instead, I would rather have sweet foods than having normal savory meals. What are your thoughts on the cravings? Why are they not going away? And just overall, is this even normal? Love this question. This is exactly why I don't love meal plans. I'm not saying they're not helpful for some, but we can be very latched onto them. Of course, we can see it as safe, like, right, this nutritionist has said this is how much I should be eating in a day with this kind of thing for breakfast, then this type of snack. And although it can be more beneficial than the restriction, obviously, it can just kind of let the eating disorder and the control like latch onto something else. So that's why I don't actually advocate for meal plans unless absolutely necessary. So just wanted to point that out there, put that out there. I do know exactly what you mean about the imaginary line. I had an imaginary line too. The thing is though, you said you can't go over this imaginary line. I think you said it at least two times. Who the fuck says you can't go over that imaginary line? The answer to that question is the eating disorder, right? It's only the eating disorder, that control, that restriction that has made up this rule due to latching onto this meal plan that you can't go over this imaginary line. It's imaginary. It's literally completely made up. So you can unimagine it because you are the one that imagined it, right? So do you want to live with an eating disorder for the rest of your life? Which might sound like a ridiculous question, but if you don't, then the imaginary line needs to go. And again, I'm going to ask you the question I asked Queen G to answer the first part of this podcast. What does it mean to you if you do gain weight? Because you said like you feel like you're going to gain weight when you've overeaten, because this is an imaginary line that's been created. And then when you cross that line, it automatically means you've overate, which doesn't make sense. I get it because I had the same. But if you look at it from a logical standpoint, it doesn't make any sense, even though it's more than logic. It's feelings and fear-based, and I get that. But let's use our logical brain too. Right? So the fear of weight gain is a big one, obviously. But what does it mean about you if you did gain weight? If I gain weight then, dot, dot, dot. And that would mean dot, dot, dot about me. Really explore the deep answer to this question, and it will help you to start to really dive into what is the true fear, because it's not weight gain in and of itself, it's what you make weight gain mean about you and how you think you're going to feel and live when that happens. And then you said you also have horrible feelings when you've crossed this imaginary line because you've decided you've overeaten. Well, of course you have horrible feelings if you cross this imaginary line, because the eating disorder has created this rule of this said imaginary line. And if you cross that, it's not happy with you, is it? Your brain is not happy with you when you cross this imaginary line. So of course it's going to send feelings of disgust, shame, fear, guilt to you so you don't do it again, because it's a rule that it's created in your brain. But you also get to uncreate that rule, but you cannot uncreate the rule without feeling horrible feelings. That is just part and partial of recovery. And there's so many of us that try to avoid the fear and uncomfortable feelings. It's impossible to recover and not feel uncomfortable feelings. And part of the work is, like through my Real Recovery Roadmap and the Holistic Way of Recovery, is learning how the fuck to actually feel your feelings, understand what that even means, and know that you can tolerate feelings and not act on them, and you're still okay, because you are not your feelings. You are not your thoughts either. You are the thinker of your thoughts, but you are not your thoughts, and your thoughts are not facts. So you say that you're allowing yourself to have these sweet foods, but you're only partially allowing, you're not fully allowing yourself, right? You're partially allowing. And that's restriction, just like moderation is. So when people say, oh, I'm allowing myself to have chocolate in moderation. Well, I tried moderation and it didn't work because I stopped myself eating the amount I truly wanted to eat. That kept me in the restriction binging cycle, right? So I also want to, before I speak to how to get out of this, you say that you would prefer to have sweet foods during the day than savory foods. Of course you'd prefer to have sweet foods. And the reason for this is because you are biologically wired to crave and to gravitate towards sweet foods when you are underfed, when your body is malnourished, when your body hasn't got enough energy coming in. You are literally programmed from a biological standpoint to do that. I had this for years, But what I would do to try and trick myself, which never worked, I would swap the true delicious sweet foods for shit like chemical syrups that didn't even have any food substance in them. They were just made out of chemicals with zero calories. I mean, that's not sweet foods. That's just fake chemical sweetness that does not hit the spot in the same way. We all know what we're talking about here. So of course you're craving sweet foods because your body needs the calories. You're trying to moderate them. You're trying to keep yourself under this line. And so of course you're going to want more of them. It's biological sense, right? So it is normal what you're experiencing, and your sweet cravings will never go away unless you fully allow them, get rid of your imaginary line. And this is as simple, not as easy, but as simple as a choice to get rid of this imaginary line that you have and fully, truly allow as much as you want. You need to allow, trust, surrender. And that's why support is really necessary through all of this, because it can be the scariest thing you'll ever do in your life. And that's why you need someone who is grounded in recovery, who has been through this, who you can trust to be like, it's okay. Trust, allow, surrender. There are your three key words. And just to support you with the fear of like gaining weight forever, only eating sweet foods forever, I promise you, you will not gain weight forever. You will not only eat sweet foods forever. I promise you this, because I thought this would happen to me too. I thought I would only ever want to eat chocolate every day for the rest of my life because it's so damn good. I am not currently eating chocolate every day for the rest of my life, because naturally when I kept allowing and my body had everything it needed, it started to crave a balanced range of nutrients. And I eat a very nutrient-dense, balanced diet without trying. It's very natural and intuitive, and that's the beauty of full recovery. Nothing is ever forced. So I'll end this with a question to you too, the asker of this question, and anyone else who is this is resonating with as you're listening or watching this. Are you willing to do what it takes to live in freedom and natural nourishment, which means allowing potential weight gain, of course, and then exploring all of what that means to you and healing from a holistic place? Let me know the answers. And thank you for listening and watching. Sending you all my love. As always, if you have any questions, please let me know. I love questions. And see you next time. Mwah.